stats of our city and our state indicate that there is much to do, much left to do. I want to thank you, and that ask as you celebrate this day, I ask you to resolve to join the vanguard of heroic champions of justice to help create a more inclusive society devoted to the ideals of liberty, freedom, and equal opportunity. Each of us, from every background, from every region, and from every race or ethnicity, has an important role to play in recognizing and realizing Dr. King's dream. I have tried to the best of my abilities as an elected official to help build a society where love overrides hate, where the services and the resources of our government are equally distributed and equal opportunity for all prevails. So I implore you today to join me in giving Portland citizens a place to grow, a place to be, a place to dream, a place to think. We must do our part to assure that the arm of the moral universe that Dr. King so eloquently reminded us would bend someday, bend towards justice for all. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's 1 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
To introduce Portland Public Schools Superintendent Dr. Vicki Phillips. Let me read your introduction first. I'm pleased that the Portland School Board recently rated our superintendent's performance in her first year at Portland as being very good. Our children and the community as a whole will continue to benefit from her outstanding leadership, and I'm proud that she's here today to say a few words. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Vicki Phillips.
Good afternoon. Since I'm an educator, I thought I'd tell you a story about Martin Luther King when he was a student. By all accounts, he was a brilliant, precocious child. In fact, he started school a year before he was supposed to. And when the school authorities found out that he was really 5 and not 6, they sent him home. Later, when he was in high school, he traveled from his Atlanta home to another town to participate in a speech competition. He delivered a speech called The Negro and the Constitution, and he did very well. He won. Even at the tender age of 14, he was able to captivate a crowd by speaking extemporaneously without a script or even notes. He was bursting with pride when he boarded the bus to go home. But then the bus driver ordered him and the teacher accompanying him to give up their seats to white riders. He didn't want to, but his teacher urged him to obey the law of the segregated South. So the two of them stood in the aisle of the bus for the 90-mile trip home. Many years later, when he wrote his autobiography, Dr. King stated, "That night will never leave my memory. It was the angriest I have been in my life." Dr. King taught us many things in his short lifetime. And when we think of him, we think of him as an advocate of nonviolence, a peacemaker. But let's not forget that Dr. King was fueled by righteous indignation. He saw the injustice of segregation, the inequity, the violence that grew out of it. As we go forward with our daily work, let us remember that it's okay to get mad, to be indignant whenever we encounter bigotry or injustice. We should not stay silent or rationalize it. Like Dr. King, anger can inspire and motivate us. We just must not act out in anger. Dr. King didn't, and yet his voice was heard worldwide. I know that as I go about my job, I get indignant when I see children getting an education that's less than they deserve and less than helpful to them succeeding in life. I take it personally. We work hard to do a lot to improve the city's schools, to close the achievement gap that holds back children of color and children of low economic status. And we will need to work together over the next few years in that cause. Let us never lose the passion to right wrongs, to fight injustice. Let Martin Luther King's righteous indignation motivate us as we move forward, so that our progress in the future is tenfold that of the past. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Ann Knight, and I have the great honor of representing Portland's teachers as president of Portland Association of Teachers. It's really nice to be here again this year, and it's especially nice for me as some members of my family were able to join me at this great celebration. My daughter Angie, my niece Deborah, and her two children, Alexis and Vincent Special, are here today, so it's a very nice celebration for me this year. PAT consists of nearly 4,000 speech pathologists, librarians, specialists, school psychologists, counselors, substitutes, and classroom teachers. PAT has been a proud sponsor of this great event for each of the past 21 years. We have worked closely with former PAT member and current PAT member, Ken Berry, who helped found this celebration. As a matter of fact, both the Oregon Education Association and the National Education Association have awarded two of their highest honors to Ken Berry for his work on this event. Every child deserves a quality public education, and they deserve to find that education right there in their own neighborhood. Every child deserves a neighborhood school that offers equal access to programs. If students in some schools deserve full-day kindergarten, music, PE, art, etc., along with the basic academics, then students in all neighborhoods deserve the same opportunity. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dreams have not yet been fulfilled. Progress has been made, but much more needs to be done. The members of PAT, Portland's teachers, work hard each day, instilling in students a love of learning, keeping their expectations for their students at a high level, nurturing, protecting, and teaching these young people that parents entrust to us. We all have a responsibility to help achieve Dr. King's dreams. But I think a major piece of that work lies in the public education system, for that should be the ultimate equalizer. Portland teachers will continue to work to eliminate obstacles and set high expectations for every one of our students. I have proudly been a public school teacher for 36 years, and as I reach the end of my career, I know I may no longer have that privilege of working in a classroom with children, but I will never stop working for a quality public schools for each and every child so that they each have a chance of achieving their dreams. Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce my friend and colleague, fellow association member from the state organization, Gail Rasmussen, Vice President of the Oregon Education Association.
And thank you, Ann. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the President, Larry Wolf, and the 45,000 members of the Oregon Education Association, it is indeed a privilege for me to be here today to support the work of the World Arts Foundation, continuing the tradition of honoring the life of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., keeping alive the dream. I have the honor of working at the Oregon Education Association with one of your own, Ms. Hazel Brown, as well as serving in various organizational capacities with the producer, Mr. Ken Berry. So this is indeed a very special moment for me. Dr. Melvin Sylvester wrote in a tribute to Dr. King the following: "History is indeed made up of significant events which shape our future and outstanding leaders who influence our destiny. Dr. King's contributions to our history place him in this position. In his short life, he was instrumental in helping us realize and rectify those unspeakable flaws which were tarnishing the name of America. The events which took place in and around Dr. King's life were earth-shattering, for they represented an America which was hostile and quite different from the America we see today. Black Americans needed Martin Luther King. But above all this, America needed him. The significant qualities of this special man cannot be underestimated nor taken for granted. Within a span of 13 years, from 1955 to his death in 1968, he was able to expound, expose, and extricate America from many wrongs. His tactics of protest involved nonviolent passive resistance to racial injustice. It was the right prescription for our country, and it was right on time. Dr. King provided a candle along with a light. He provided this nation with a roadmap so that all people could locate and share together in the abundance of this great democracy. We honor Dr. King because he showed us the way to mend broken fences and to move on in building this land rather than destroying it. He led campaign after campaign in the streets of America, on to the governor's mansion, even to the White House, in an effort to secure change. Dr. King reminded us that our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter, and that the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. We must remain ever vigilant to the dream. So I say thank you, Dr. King, for being the drum major who was able and ready to lead our nation to greater heights through love and peace. And thank you, World Arts Foundation, for keeping alive the dream. Thank you.
Certainly want to thank our sponsors. How are we doing out there today, you guys? Okay, now this is our 21st annual, and I know it's a little bit warm out there, but it's extremely cold outside. So let's see if we can warm it up just a little bit more in here with a little bit more noise. How are we doing out there today? I'm still convinced we can do better. So I need your help. I need your help on this one. I need you to really bring the energy in this room. I need you to bring the energy to me. I need you to bring the energy to our production crew up there. So I'm going to ask you this one last time, and I want you just to really give me all you got. How are we doing out there? That's what I'm talking about. Yes. Thank you for allowing me to address you today. My name is John L. Bell, and I am one of your master of ceremonies today. I have the pleasure of being one of your production members. Just in case those who may be listening here on our 90.7 FM radio dial, with the thanks to our KBOO sponsors, I want to let you know that we are here live at Jefferson High School celebrating the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the wonderful work of the Civil Rights Movement. You know, this production every year takes more than just a lot of time and a lot of volunteers. It also takes money, currency. And we are fortunate every year to have a number of sponsors really step through and really help us out. And I just want to list those right now, if I may. We would like to thank our Portland Public Schools partners, our Portland Association of Teachers, McDonald's of Oregon and Southwest Washington. We would like to thank Dignity Memorial Locations, Safeco Insurance, Oregon Education Association, Providence Health System, Portland Community College, Enterprise Rent a Car, Portland General Electric, African American Chamber of Commerce, KBOO Radio, and of course Jefferson High School, and all of our wonderful staff with the World Arts Foundation. So I get to introduce one of our significant and fun talents today. I know that you're going to help me introduce them after I read their bio here. It's extremely fitting that we're here in Jefferson High School today on such a wonderful occasion to introduce this next group. It is a unique year for the Jefferson Dancers. This elite, nationally known program is here at Portland's Jefferson High School, and they are celebrating their 30th anniversary this year. Yes. It is the longest running dance company in Portland. So mark your calendars. If you have your calendars, get them out right now. I'm going to give you a date. Coming up between May 10th and 13th, they will have their annual concert at the Portland Center for the Performing Arts. This wonderful group is led by the artistic director, Steve Gonzalez. So, ladies and gentlemen, please help me introduce our next talent, the Jefferson Dancers!
Okay, so we can feel the anticipation in the room as we're waiting the Jefferson Dancers to start. And they are slowly moving their way towards the stage. We can hear the African drumming starting.
Yes, indeed, the Jefferson Dancers, like I said, have been doing it for many years. The lights have been dimmed, and the drummers are drumming.
The anticipation is clear.
Coming right up, coming right up. And there is still room here at Jefferson High School, 5210 North Kirby. You get a chance, come on down and see it live for yourself.
And if you saw these wonderful dancers in the blue, gold outfits that they have worn, it's clear that they are bringing the spirit of Africa into the Jefferson Auditorium right now.
Oh, yes. Most traditional dance. And
you're missing a beautiful sight. Yes,
you know what they're
yes.
doing, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think they're professional. So we're gonna let the people in Jefferson Auditorium and invite you to come down and join us as well. But while the dancers are dancing, we're going to take this opportunity to speak to one of our community icons, and that is the Honorable Dr. Grace Osborne, who is with Grace Covenant Memorial Church right here in Portland. Welcome to the radio,
Thank you very much, Dr. Osborne. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And, you know, the listening audience can't see this absolutely beautiful green silk with African print suit that you have on. But
Modeling very well.
Modeling very well and looking absolutely gorgeous. It is such a pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks again. I'm happy to be here.
And you have been a stalwart of this community for so long, and it's just so wonderful to have you here being part of this 21st anniversary celebration. I think you've been here just about every year, haven't you?
I have. I know for the last 10 years, and I don't remember how long I was here before that.
All right.
when I wasn't even a participant. I was just looking on.
Just in the audience,
I think, huh? I've been in the audience. I've been a participant for at least 10 years.
Oh, that's fabulous. That's fabulous. And what inspires you to keep coming back year in and year out to help with this community celebration?
Well, I think that we as a people are doing a beautiful job. I was just commending Johnny there and saying there's so much work to be done, and I think it's the least I can do to just participate when I'm asked to come on, because they work so hard. Months and months of work are put into putting on this performance, and I think it's an inspiration for the year. It begins right after the beginning of the year, and I think it should inspire all of us to do what we need to do, and that's get on board with the ideals of Martin Luther King.
That's absolutely
true.
And Dr. Osborne, what inspires you to just keep doing all the incredible work that you do in this community?
And tell us some of the things that you do.
Well,
putting you on the spot. We love it.
Yes. Well, I am a minister, first of all, and so I do teach. But I'm also in the community trying to do what I can to help our people.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say our people, I don't just mean black people, but all of our people that need us.
That's right.
Hey,
but
amen.
Being of the black race myself, of course I have an affinity to try to help us move up. And when I say up, I'm not just speaking of up the ladder for fame and fortune. But so many of us have little self-esteem as to who we are and what we can accomplish. And I just like to see people live the kind of life that they're destined to live and be able to do the things that some of them had no idea. I have one individual in mind in particular that they said when they first met us, they didn't think they could do very much. They were very shy. And as I began to tell them, yeah, you can do it, and I finally just told them, you can do anything you put your hands to. And actually, they started doing it. They started learning how to play the piano. They started learning how to teach. They went to college. They went to Portland Community College. That's fine.
Yes.
And just learned all kinds of trades. So they're doing quite well for themselves now. I have a good job, steady job, and working. And when they came here from back east, they thought they were a nobody because they came from the ghetto and that sort of thing.
And it's always a culture shock too, coming from the east, coming to Portland.
Absolutely,
a person of color.
Absolutely,
it is a lot different. I know my own experience is that there's so many. I think actually there's so many advantages to being born and raised on the East Coast and then moving out west. Because on the East Coast, you have to have your act together or you're going to freeze your butt off in the wintertime.
You'll get run over, freeze down.
I know. I live back here.
And on the West Coast, I mean, there's a lot of things that we're able to do on the West Coast that you can't do on the East Coast.
Right.
For instance, the easy accessibility of political leaders.
Mm-hmm.
In this state, you can walk into any elected leader's office, no matter who you are, and get an audience.
Mayor's sitting right here.
Mayor was sitting right here with us earlier.
Right.
Other city council members here in the audience. But in the East Coast, you can't do that. I mean, the best you can hope for is a senior staff person to give you some time.
Well, I wasn't as involved in community work when I was back east as I have been last 50 years.
Shaping and molding. Shaping and molding.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bishop Osborne.
Well, and I just want to say, personally, you've been an inspiration to me over the years because I've watched you quietly do the people's work year in and year out with little fanfare, little recognition. But I want you to know you're definitely one of my community heroes.
So thank you very much.
You are very welcome. We've been talking to Bishop Grace Osborne, and it's been a pleasure having her here today.
Yes, you're going to hang around a little bit more, I hope.
I hope so, too.
I was going to ask Bishop Osborne, I was going to ask her to share with the listeners during the 60s. You were here in Portland during the 60s.
Yes.
And you were here when Martin Luther King was assassinated back east.
Yes.
Downtown. What was Portland like? What was going on in Portland and your church scene when you heard the news?
I think Portland in part had their head in the sand because there were just few of us when I came here. There were only 13,000, I think, in the whole state of Oregon. And so because there were so few of us, we thought we didn't have a problem.
13,000 black folks?
That's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the early, over 50 years ago.
Gotcha.
So, but when the assassination took place and all of the things started happening, I think some of our people were in shock. They were shocked. And they didn't exactly know what to do. But I think we didn't come out unscathed, but we came out better than a lot of the other cities in the East, definitely.
Right.
And definitely
right,
better
and
also
violence.
Than the West Coast. Mm-hmm. There wasn't as much violence, but we did have violence. I remember it very well.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I can't say that I participated in doing anything other than, as a minister, I remember very well, I was telling a friend here how mm-hmm. much we prayed that things would cool off.
Right.
And I do remember we did do a little walking mm-hmm. and trying to help with the people were putting graffiti. That's when it really started, mm-hmm. and we tried to stop some of that.
Wow.
But we didn't do any major things.
It just really reminds me of how much of our history we still need to connect, get from our elders,
mm-hmm.
because there's so much local, rich, informative history that we just don't know about in this community.
Right.
So we really appreciate you sharing some of that with us here today.
One more question, Dr. Osborne. With your divine wisdom and eldership, if my question is today, if not Dr. King, then who? Who do you think could have been another person who could have brought us in this direction, if not Martin Luther King Jr.?
I don't know of another person that would have had the courage and the wisdom to do what he did. He took his cue from history.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a tendency to want to go the other direction. We want to do violent things. And he wasn't for violence.
Nope.
So I don't know who, but I do know that my heart is where his was.
All right.
Amen.
All
nonviolence.
Right. Thank you very much.
And I think one of the legacies that we really talk about with Dr. King is his adamant opposition to war.
Mm-hmm.
Because he understood instinctively
mm-hmm.
that violence was not the solution
not
to
the
any of the world conflicts that we're involved in. And so it's a wonderful opportunity for us to just remind ourselves that there is a way to disagree and to make the world change, and it doesn't necessarily involve violence at all.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Osborne, very much.
I tell you, boy, those Jefferson dancers were pretty awesome. If you had seen what we've just seen, I tell you, I don't know if I feel just too old watching all those dancers move around, because I don't think I can make my body move like that anymore. But we are here live at Jefferson High School. We are celebrating the 21st annual Keep Alive the Dream event, and we hope you will join us here later. We're actually in the process now of hoping to get an interview with our state senator, Avell Gordley, who is here in the studio, and it's just been just a fabulous, fabulous day so far. Oh, we actually are going to be talking to a woman. We're going to be talking to some people in a little bit who are, in fact, one of our sponsors, and I understand that they are owners of McDonald's restaurants locally, and they are on their way this way, and we will look forward to talking to them shortly. Did you really enjoy those Jefferson dancers? They were pretty awesome, weren't they?
I did. You know, we got two sets here. We got the eyes on the screen. We got the ears on the scene. So it's all good here. It's part of the King Jr. celebration.
And you could just feel the excitement in the place. I think people are just coming out and really, really putting their heart and souls into the events and activities that are taking place here today.
Hey, and it's me, Lisa Loving here. I'm hanging out over here at Jefferson High School. We're live, broadcasting live from Jefferson High School. It's the Martin Luther King Memorial Show here, and the people from McDonald's actually are going to be going on stage and giving a a speech right now about their diversity program, so that's interesting.
Uh-huh.
If people had tuned into Democracy Now! This morning at 11, we had extensive speeches from Dr. King, his anti-war stance. And I'm kind of looking around to see if there's anyone around here that's going to actually take up that mantle, mm-hmm. talking about the war in Iraq, because definitely there's people that care about that. But this event is a kaleidoscope of community. That's what's so juicy about it.
Yes.
I mean, there's kids, there's grown-ups. Abel Gourley's over there talking with Jeff Colgan, talking with the government, you know, and there's choirs, and it's really exciting. And I think that we might get, actually, there's an African-American woman that owns several McDonald's stores in the mm-hmm. Portland metro area. It's never what people kind of expect it's going to be.
Right,
so we're
right.
hoping to get
never
her behind
know.
This mic when know. She's done on the stage. But, you know, it is pretty cool also as I'm walking around backstage here to see how many people from the community, like Chaffee Grice,
mm-hmm.
who
yeah.
is a director back here, director of this event, but he lives in California.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole group of
comes
people
back
that...
every year.
Yeah, they come back every year.
Every single year, like clockwork. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, as it gets to October, November, Chappie's going to be on the phone or emailing you saying, okay, it's time. Okay,
people
where's your peas?
Getting turkeys ready and getting ready for Christmas.
Behind the scenes
heating up.
It's a tight community, and sometimes I think people forget that when you read the bad headlines about Jefferson High School or what have you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in this town, I don't think enough Portlanders come into this building, and I think that you should come down here. We are live at Jefferson High School on... actually, Jefferson High School is located right off Alberta Street, interestingly.
Uh-huh. You can
what
see the
is the address
again? Alberta. The address is 5210 North Kirby. Mm-hmm. If you're going down Killingsworth, if you see the North Portland Library, it's right behind the library. You see the field and you see the school. And then you'll find the auditorium and you'll find the wonderful program here this afternoon.
We now have Doug Wacker, who is one of our sponsors, speaking. He's a McDonald's franchise owner, and he's actually one of the sponsors of this year's event, and he's the current speaker that you're listening to.
I'd like to introduce Joe Crenshaw, local McDonald's owner-operator.
Hello, everyone. Hello. I'm Joe Crenshaw. I'm a McDonald's operator. I've been a McDonald's operator for 15 years. I own 5 restaurants in the area. I'll bring you one. Come on over. 2 of my restaurants, actually 3 of my restaurants, are on 82nd Avenue, starting at Foster, ending at Clackamas Town Center. I own one in Damascus, Oregon. That's way out there. I own another one in Oregon City, which is way out there. But we participate in the community, and we also support the school systems, support scholarships for our students, and we ask that you continue to support Jefferson High School. I'm very proud to say that McDonald's diversity is more than just a word. It's a directive. It's a way of life. It's the way that we do business. These are my fellow operators here in the Oregon area. We own restaurants that are in your community, so we ask that you support us. McDonald's founder Ray Kroc said, "None of us are as good as all of us together, so we must all work together." McDonald's is a widely recognized organization. Essence Magazine voted McDonald's in 2005, one of the 35 best places to work. Black Enterprise in 2005 voted McDonald's as one of the 30 best companies with diversity. Fortune Magazine also in 2003 and 2004 voted McDonald's as one of the top companies for minorities within the United States. McDonald's has created ownership opportunities and is today's country's largest organization of African-American franchisees. The combined sales of McDonald's operators, African-American operators, is about more than 33% of their total sales. 17% of McDonald's officers are African-Americans. 20% of McDonald's employees are African-American. And this number is continuously growing. McDonald's has a National Black Minority Operators Association that has over 320 African-American owners. That's about 12% of the total McDonald's operators. So you can be proud to know that McDonald's African-American community is working for you. We ask that you continuously support us. We thank you. I'd like to present to you our next owner-operator, Francisco Rivera.
Hello, everyone. Muy buenas tardes a todos. I am Francisco Rivera. I am a Hispanic McDonald's owner-operator. I own two stores here in the Northeast Portland area. I've been an operator for about 3 years now. And I wanted to come up here and talk about the Hispanic community and our Hispanic employees in our stores. McDonald's is a major employer for both career and non-career positions within the local communities. Overall, Hispanics contribute an estimated 43.9% of all employees in the West Division. McDonald's also provides a significant number of opportunities for Hispanic women. Hispanic women can make up approximately 30% of the total McDonald's workforce and 65.7% of all Hispanics. Hispanics comprise a significant portion of those career positions. They occupy 32% of the restaurant management positions and 25.4% of support staff. The average Hispanic manager works for McDonald's for about 7 years, which is more than 8.5 times greater or longer than the national average for an employee in a similar age category. Another important attribute of McDonald's approach to employment is to provide opportunities to Hispanics of all ages, specifically providing opportunities for younger people. For example, in our West Division, 59% of all Hispanic employees are 21 to 35 years old, and 20.9% are 20 years or younger. In 2004, McDonald's restaurants paid $882.8 million in wages to their Hispanic employees. And being part of the McDonald's community and in this activity, I feel very proud to be a Latino McDonald's owner-operator. I want to present to you guys Mr. James Dotson, sorry, never is here. He also wants to say a few words. He's also a McDonald's owner-operator here in the Portland area.
Thank you, everyone. How's everybody doing? Good. My name is James Dotson. I have three stores in the Portland area. My job is a bit simpler and easier than these three folks here, and that is just to give one message, and that's to thank you, all of you, for your support in our efforts in giving back to the community. Thank you so much.
Okay, we want to take a moment and introduce Cedric Weary. He's the director of Inspirational Sounds from Eugene, Oregon. Welcome to Jefferson High School here in Portland.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you here today. Now, why did you decide, of all the places you could have been on Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, to join us here at Jefferson High School today?
This is sort of a tradition for us. University of Oregon has come here, I think this is the third year, and Inspirational Sound, this is at least the 10th year that we've joined in with you one way or another. It is a beautiful event. It's always done to the highest quality, and we enjoy and look forward to this event every single year we do it.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we're very pleased to have you back again, and we know that this is a community celebration.
Yes,
and
yes.
So when we think community broadly, we certainly include Eugene and Salem and all up and down the I-5 corridor.
Amen.
So we're looking forward to hearing you. So what songs are you going to sing for us today?
Oh, we'll do some contemporary stuff, probably a song called Higher. We give God the glory to the highest praise.
All right.
A couple others that we'll surprise you with.
Well, I got to tell you, this is like the best looking choir I've seen in quite a while.
Oh, thank
boy,
you very
I tell
much.
You, they look like they're just so beautiful and just so full of joy and just so, just they add so much to the excitement that's already here at Jefferson. Now, Cedric, you look a little young to be like in charge of this group.
It's the water.
Just the good genes, or
good
genes?
Good living.
Okay.
Living for Jesus. So,
all right.
You know, he takes care of you.
All right. Well, that's a fact. Well, it's a pleasure, and we'll look forward to hearing from you and your choir shortly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I see one member of the choir was quite a trooper. She's got extra legs with her today. She's on crutches, and I'm sure her voice is going to be heard this afternoon.
All right.
Miss it for nothing.
Very good.
You know, it's nothing like looking at a choir that's really representative of our community. And you look at this choir and you see the rainbow of all the beauty that our community has to hold. So
all God's children.
All God's children. You got that right. So thank you for being here, and we're looking forward to being inspired by the inspirational sounds from Eugene. Thank you.
Mr. Cedric Weary, director.
Thank you very much. God
have a good afternoon.
All right.
This incredible legacy of a man who has touched every single person in this room and within the sounds of my voice and beyond. So at this time, you gave it up so that we could hear you, so that everybody who isn't in this room could hear you. This time, I want you to put your hands together and give a loud, loud, resounding applause to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Good afternoon. We're now joined by Joe Creshaw. And Miss Joe Creshaw is a owner of several McDonald's franchises here in the Portland metro area. Welcome to the radio, Miss Creshaw.
Thank you, Julia.
It's a pleasure to have you here today.
It's great to be here today.
And we want to thank you on the air for helping to sponsor this program. We know that 21 years of celebrating Dr. King is such an important issue for our community, and we want to thank you for stepping up and helping to make this program so successful.
Thank you very much. It's very important for us as McDonald's operators here in the community to be a part of such a wonderful occasion. I mean, growing up as a young person, seeing Dr. King and listening to him and having him inspire me to be here, it's just very, very wonderful to be involved.
Well, we sure appreciate you, and I know that I'm sure people blink once or twice when you see this beautiful African-American woman, and she says, oh, yeah, and by the way, I happen to own a couple of franchises of McDonald's.
A couple Mickey D's out there.
It's always very surprising when I tell people that, because we just basically do our job. We get involved. Mm-hmm. We work our restaurants, and you can't work it by being out in the street every day advertising who you are. You advertise by what you do.
By what you do.
Why we are. Normally, when I go out to speak or something of that sort, I get these questions. How in the world did you get into this business?
Right.
Good question.
15 years.
15 years.
How did you?
Well, I got into the business. I was a McDonald's employee for about 8 years, and I wanted to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
But I moved here from Northern California. Used to live in your town, Joanne, in the Oakland area.
Ah, Oakland.
And I graduated from college there. So when I moved here, I wanted to do something different after 8 years, and I didn't want to move from the Northwest. I loved it. I mean, even though the rain.
Right.
Makes it green, yo. Liquid sunshine.
But we didn't want to move. I have two sons, and we just decided that this is what we wanted to do. So I asked my boss if he could help me to get into the business, and there was a store available to buy. It was out in Oregon City. They didn't know any black people out there, but it was old and dilapidated. I put my name in, had enough money, bought it, and the story continues.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Creshaw. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And thanks again for sponsoring Keep the Dream Alive.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You know, much of what we remember from Dr. King were his words of empowerment, his words of courage. And my objective has been for the last couple of years to help people understand that words do bring healing, but they also have the potential to be devastating and kill someone's spirit. So my objective is always to remind people to use our words to heal and not to hurt. We tell them stones may break our bones, but words will never hurt us. It's called Dream Again, The Effects of Shaming. It was written by a very good friend of mine, Sunshine Dixon, and it reminds us how words affect us and how we need to reach beyond what people tell us and be able to live our dreams. Dead and decayed. The stone is rolled away, and today I dream again. Through shame, my dream was detoured and left to die. Shame graduated to a pain, the kind that not even Webster can define. The effects of shaming are: A, missing assignments. B, missing books. C, missing classes. D, making detention. E, making excuses. F, making failing grades. G, graduation. H, I interview. J, dead end job. K, knowing that I deserve better. L, longing for more. M, monetary needs. N, no negotiating skills. O, opportunities missed. P, promotions denied. Q, I quit. R, I am ruined. S, I am shamed. T, I am toiling and toiling and toiling. U, I am unemployed. V, I feel violated. W, when did I deserve this poison future? X, please explain it to me, my mentor, my teacher, my parent, my friend, my boss. Y, you saw my potential. You saw the flame of my future, and you blew as hard as you could. Z, you tried to put my dreams to sleep. Again, my friend. Is there a cure to cancer coiled in the creativity of a derailed, detoured destiny? Are we crippling a nation through low expectations, cultural degradation, and very few positive impartations in our institutions of higher education? Dream again, my friend. Dream in dimensions that are
that are greater than, bigger than, larger than life. Dream an immense, enormous, gigantic dream. Mammoth, colossal, gargantuan dreams. Dream again. Unwrap the untapped possibilities of your destiny. Be as great as you were made to be before your life was detoured by someone else's smallness. My friend, dream again. Name your dream Lazarus and call it forth from the grave. That which was thought dead and decayed, behold, the stone is rolled away, and you too can dream again. Dream again. Don't let anyone steal your dream. Dream again. Don't listen to the negativity people are feeding your life. Dream again. Forth from the grave, and that which was thought dead and decayed, behold, the stone is rolled away, and you too can dream again. Thank you.
Writer, poet Renee Mitchell.
Renee Mitchell and Company. Outstanding.
Okay, we've just been listening to Renee Mitchell read some poetry, and we have listened to, she was accompanied by, was that Aaron Meyer, I believe.
Nice music, too.
That was a very nice music, wasn't it?
Background to keep her nice and soft.
Kept it.
Because Renee can get very hard and busy when it's time for that, too. Yes.
Well, we have, who do we have joining us now?
We have Mr. Matthew Barnett. I think Mr. Barnett is representing Safeco Insurance today.
Yes, basically, I'm an independent insurance agent at one of the companies that I represent is Safeco, and I'm proud to say that Safeco Insurance has been a part of the Martin Luther King celebration for quite some years, at least about 5 years on it. I introduced them to Ken Berry, and it was an instant attraction, and they've been one of the sponsors here for at least about 5 years.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's wonderful when the businesses in our local community stand up to support such a worthy cause and activities. So have you been in an insurance business for a while?
We've been in business.
It's 1:52. You're listening to KBOO Portland's live broadcast of the 21st annual celebration commemorating the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., and is being broadcast live from Jefferson High School today on KBOO Portland. Until 6 p.m.
Okay. All right, we're back here.
Okay, we're back in the studio. We were preempted by our own station.
Hi, studio.
Well, who says we can't go with the flow, huh?
Yes, indeed. Okay. Ms. Barnett was telling us about...
Being in the insurance industry.
Yes, yes.
I've been an insurance agent for the past 25 years and been fortunate enough to employ a good number of people on it. Presently, I have a son and a daughter that are involved in the business with me. And my daughter, Lisa, will be taking over the agency probably within another year or so. She's trying to force me out.
Trying to send you to early retirement, is she?
No siblings, here they come.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, tell us why Dr. King matters today. And you know, you hear the kids say sometimes, you know, you guys are stuck back in the old days. Mm. Why is Dr. King's memory and his vision of what life could be so important today?
Well, some of the things that Dr. King taught was a part of my practice many years ago. I got stung by the race car
bug,
and
yes,
it bit me pretty hard on it, and I was told that that was something that I couldn't get involved in. It cost too much money. I didn't have the knowledge. It just stuck with me until a friend of mine, we put together a race car, James Kaysen, and we had championship race cars. But the thing that Dr. King taught me so much was that you can be a part of anything that you want in this world. And when I see young kids now that are not trying, after he has broken down the barriers for us and allowed us to be able to approach success, it just makes my heart ache that him, along with Mega Evers and so many others who have opened the doors for us, and we don't take this opportunity on it. Dr. King meant a lot to me. He showed me that I can achieve anything that I wish.
And you did. You did. I was mentioning earlier, as a young child growing up, James Kaysen that Mr. Barnett's talking about was a frequent member of his girlfriend across the street, and I got the pleasure of, as a young boy, used to go to the drag strip down to Woodburn a couple of times with the crew, and got to watch you guys race your car. Now, I didn't become a legal race car driver. I did race up and down Union Avenue quite a few times, but you know, that's what does it is. When we get a chance to see people of color, people look like us and talk like us, do things, we know that we also can do that. And like you said, there's nothing that can stop you as long as you wanted to do it, and you could do it.
Yeah.
You did it. You did it very good, you and James.
Well, you know, with the teachings that Dr. King had on it, if a person would approach Christianity on it, and that's something I did many years ago on it, and knowing that if God is for me, who can be against me on it? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the world is mine. I can accomplish anything I want. I've been blessed to have enjoyed a very enjoyable life. Mm-hmm. And been able to say I've been in business for 25 years to employ people and to have my kids follow along with me on it. That sometimes I don't enjoy having them there with me all the time.
So close.
Thank you so much. We're going to go back and join the program now with Senator Avell Gordley.
Thank you, Matthew,
speaking to the audience here at Jefferson High School.
Yes, indeed.
Because that's what they put forth, love. Jimmy Brown, Dr. Joy Leary, Dr. Norwood Knight Richardson, and Joe Bean Keller. Many, many people in this community, some of whom are with us today and in this audience, they saw and felt the need of hurricane survivors, people who dropped whatever they were doing and acting in the name of the love community, reached out to help their neighbors, reached out all the way
to Martin Luther King celebration. You're listening to Senator Avell Gordley in progress.
Senator Avell Gordley, live. Or within the sound of my voice, please know that you are welcome here in your new home. Now, just to bring things a bit more closer to home, consider this. One of the key lessons we learned from Katrina is that in the event of a catastrophe, like an earthquake, and an earthquake is likely in the region that we live in, it's not a matter of if, but when, how will we rely on ourselves and on each other? A lesson learned from Katrina is that the best protection is preparation. And so I ask you, how many people in this audience and within the sound of my voice? Have an emergency plan? How many people have an emergency plan? How many know your child's school emergency plan, including evacuation destinations? That was a lesson from Katrina, was that the public was pretty much unaware of any emergency preparedness plan. And that's something that we can learn from. That's something that we must learn from. And so I'm here with a call to action and for something for each of you to participate in. On February 4th, from 9 until noon, at Emmanuel Temple Church, All the people applauding will be there. February 4th, 9 to noon, emergency preparedness training. And we need people who are here in this audience today to please sign up to attend. I believe there is a booth in downstairs in the information area. Look for Multnomah County Health Department. Sign up or show up at Emmanuel Temple Church, February 4th, 9 to noon, for that emergency preparedness training. This is serious. This is about saving our lives or the lives of someone else. So please make this a priority. This is about your contribution, our contribution, to creating King's beloved community. And so I issue this call to action in the name of King's beloved community, and I say thank you for your response. God bless you. God bless all of us, and thank you.
And the inspirational sound. Thank you.
We've been listening to the inspirational sound. I have two young ladies here with me today, Vanessa and Kiana. Hi, Vanessa. Hi, Kiana.
Hi.
How are you today?
Good.
Excellent. So tell me why you ladies are here at Jefferson High School today.
Well,
you're part of a choir, right?
Right.
And what's it called?
No Kidding Choir.
And tell me about the No Kidding Choir. What's that about?
Well, I've only been here like this year.
Okay.
So I don't know that much. All I know is that like it's a gospel kind of a gospel choir.
Okay.
So we sing church songs.
Right. And it's what's the meaning behind the songs that you're singing? The songs are about what, unity and working together, or
yeah, and believing in yourself.
Believing in yourself, wonderful. And so you've been in the choir for 1 year, so you just started this year.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And do you do it as part of a school program, or is this something that you do on the weekends and in the evenings?
It's like a after school program.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And what school do you go to?
Sabin.
Oh, okay. And so are you having a good time in school this year?
Yeah.
And is this a wonderful program for you to be a part of today?
Yeah.
Excellent. So what's the best thing that's happening in school this year?
Well, in school we're like learning a lot, I'm just learning my time.
All right. And what grade are you in at Sabin?
I'm in second grade.
Oh, okay. What about you, Keisha? Oh, I'm sorry. I said your name wrong, didn't I? What's your name again?
Kiana.
I'm sorry, Kiana. Forgive me.
It's okay. I'm in fifth grade, and so my favorite thing that we're doing right now is reading.
Oh, bless you. Reading? Your favorite thing is reading? That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Now, tell me. Now, what do you know about Dr. King? Do you know why we're celebrating his birthday?
He changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very wise man. And he's very important this day. And he just did a lot of important stuff.
He did, Vanessa. So, Vanessa, you've been learning a lot about Dr. King. How about you? What do you know about Dr. King and why we're here today celebrating his birthday?
Well, that he's like a great guy, and when white people and black people didn't really like each other,
right.
he put them together, but somebody was jealous of him, so that they made whites and blacks go against each other again. And then he did I Have a Dream speech.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that permanently put whites and blacks together.
So you think that speech really did a lot to unify black people and white people, huh?
Yeah.
And you see the legacy of his work today?
Yeah.
And that even in your school, right? You have a lot of people of different colors that go to Sabin Elementary, huh?
Yeah, we have Mexicans.
Uh-huh.
We have, some people are from Alaska, China.
Uh-huh. So you got people from all over the world in your school.
Yeah.
And because of Dr. King and his legacy, that's possible that we can all go to school together and learn and sing and hang out. So what do you want the listening audience to know about you being here at Jefferson High School today? Why? What's the message you want them to leave from hearing you?
Well, we are a very good choir.
All right.
We are...
You got those beautiful T-shirts on. I bet the people on the radio don't know that you've got these beautiful blue T-shirts that say NKC. Which is the No Kidding Choir, right?
Right.
Well, we are certainly looking forward to hearing your choir perform later, and I thank you, young ladies, for spending time with me. We've been talking to Kiana and Vanessa from the No Kidding Choir, and both are students at Sabin Elementary School. Thank you so much for being here talking to me today.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Good job.
Yes, for the rest of our day.
God the glory. We've come to give God the praise.
Blackfeather and Janice Scroggins.
Hi.
So I just got here and so I didn't get to hear you, but I look at the program and I see that you opened the events today.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very exciting. It's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is. This is
very beautiful.
It's good energy here today.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your musical history. And so can you go over with us part of that and the connection to this event here?
Okay. Well, I've been playing for a very long time. I started playing in Oklahoma, and I've been playing over 40-some-odd years. And I got to Portland in 1979, and that's when I met Thera Memory and Mr. Ken Berry. And soon after, you know, they started putting on the King program, so I've been involved since about the beginning of things, helping Miss Berry put the choirs and different groups together and playing throughout the day wherever they need me, whatever they need me to do. Yeah.
And this is the 21st?
Yes.
Annual?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
This event, MLK, for me, I've been going through some a lot of reflections and about what Martin Luther King means to me in a personal way. Let me ask you this, and what does Martin Luther King and this day mean to you as an artist and being part of this community?
Well, it reminds me of how far we've come. Like I was telling the kids in class a few days ago, how it was against the law for all races to mix together in schools and stuff, and even in restaurants, and we couldn't go in restaurants. Doctor's offices, you know, separate waiting rooms and things like that, and how people fought and died for their privilege to be free, so we can go anywhere and perform anywhere around, you know, with mixed audiences, which is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look every day and I think of the blessing and the sacrifices that they made, and so we could be all together and hopefully stay together.
And stay together. You know, the thing that's been, you know, what you're saying, like, what's been striking me is the fact that it was basically illegal for us all to relate to one another.
Yes, yes.
You know, to build relationships with one another, and that was institutionalized law.
Okay.
Yeah.
Today, I mean, given the context of the violence that we have in this country and in this city, it's one thing to reflect on what Martin Luther King did in the past, but now, could you give me some of your observation in terms of now what his legacy means now to deal with our violence today and...
Well, for me, in looking at how violent things are, it just really disturbs me. And at the same time, we should continue to teach nonviolent ways of resolving issues. That's so important. So many people, you know, keep dying for just senseless things. And it's just, we just need to come together and just reinforce peaceful ways of getting along and getting rid of conflicts. We can sit and talk and we can disagree, but we don't have to kill each other. And to remind each other of how priceless we are, how priceless life is, and just don't snatch it away for nothing.
That was artist Janice Scroggins and we have Jefferson Smith, Jefferson High School. And what's coming up now is Jefferson Smith of the Oregon Bus Project live.
Schools are among the shortest in the nation in terms of days in the year. We are not yet at the mountaintop. Between 1998 and 2001, the gap between the wealthiest and the poorest Americans grew 71%, nearly doubled in 3 years. The dream is not realized. We are not at the promised land. Dr. King said, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. But it does not bend by itself. It takes work. Nor does the bending ever really get done. It takes eternal vigilance by the people who are willing to come here instead of going to a mattress sale or watch daytime television as a way to celebrate this holiday. Rosa Parks, who passed away last year, helped change a nation by refusing to give up her seat on a bus. But first she had to get on that bus. She had started well before that day. She had gotten on the bus of activism. She had been trained by activists and become an activist herself. She wanted to make a difference. It was not an accident. It was a coordinated effort for social justice. She got on the bus before she ever got on the bus. There are two young men here, Charles McGee and John L. Bell, who have to organize this event, who are working to build a voter registration program, a hip-hop voter drive for this community, to connect voters and build political leadership for the future. Two little facts. One, I know, grew up in this neighborhood. There are a lot of people in this community who feel disempowered, who feel that politicians, elected leaders, don't listen to this community. Let me give you another fact. The district in which we sit has among the lowest voter turnout in the nation, excuse me, in the state. And nobody cares what we think if they never hear what we say. Votes matter. The presidential election 2000 was decided by fewer than 600 votes. There are just about that number of people here and in the balcony outside waiting to come in. So today I'm asking that you help. Charles and Janelle, I'm asking that you get on the bus. That you participate in your communities, that we all work together to bend the arc of history towards justice. And on the count of three, I am done, but I'd like to, together that we yell, get on the bus, because it seems like we should have a little energy. I very much applaud the time you all are spending today to try to make this day again not a day of mattress sales, but a day of remembrance, of activism, and a remembrance of working for social justice. So on the count of three, together, let's say get on the bus. One, two, three. Oh, that's good. And again, one, two, three. And one last time. This time I'm going to throw out buttons to the crowd that say, I'm on the bus like I'm wearing. One, two, three. Thank you very much for your time, everybody.
Jefferson Smith, founder and president of the Oregon Bus Project. Recording artists Aaron Meyer and Bill Lamb hold a very special place in our hearts for not only their music, but caring for the human family. They have used their talents to raise money for worthy causes. Aaron and Bill have also soloed with the Oregon Symphony. They really need no introduction. Here they are, Aaron Meyer and Bill Lamb.
Eduardo de Landeros Tierra, and I'm with Sherry Blackfeather. Let me remind folks that we are at the 21st anniversary tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and it's the theme is Keep Alive the Dream. We're at the Robert Grady Ford Auditorium at Jefferson High School, and Sherry Blackfeather is going to introduce somebody.
I'm with Danielle Damon, and you're the director of the Royal Priesthood.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me about that.
The Royal Priesthood is a ministry that's based out of Seattle, Washington, in the Tacoma area. And we also have members as far as actually even here in Portland, Oregon. It's a ministry that specializes in singing with mild choreography.
Wow.
And we also enjoy ministry in events like this, as well as schools, and as well as we've sang pretty much everywhere.
Wow.
So it's just a ministry that just enjoys worshiping God.
What's the age range of folks that are involved in the Royal
I would
Priesthood?
Say 18-year-old to maybe, we have someone as old as, I won't say as old, but as seasoned as maybe 55, 60 years old. Yeah. So they're pretty, the age bracket is pretty various.
Tell me about you said dance.
Yeah.
Tell me about the dance component.
Basically, we have a lot of young, energetic members of our ministry, and so the songs that we sing allow them to kind of move around freely and kind of enjoy the music and celebrate very, you know, presentationally, you know what I mean? So it's like there's a lot of groove songs, there's a lot of worship songs, so what we try and do is sing and actually paint a picture with our motions as well, and sometimes it's staged where we do things simultaneously with routine and everything.
Wow, that's great. And you're performing today?
Yes, we're actually getting ready to perform next, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. Okay, this is going to be really fun to watch and to hear. So you live in Seattle.
Yes.
And so the organization is mostly based in Seattle. And where else do you draw members from?
We have members pretty much around the greater Washington area. We have members in Bremerton, Washington. We have members in Tacoma, Washington, Federal Way, all of the surrounding cities of Seattle, and then some as far as Portland, Oregon.
So as director,
yes.
Tell me what you do.
I arrange the music. I write some songs. I also pretty much work with the musicians to direct the band, choreograph the music. We do Bible studies in our rehearsals, and then I do the Bible studies as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you recruit, do you reach out into, the schools? Or?
Actually, a lot of it came from word of mouth. We've been in existence now for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and so what's happened is the word of mouth and the performance, what it does is it attracts other people.
Right.
And if they feel compelled to want to be a part of that caliber of music, then they'll just ask, and then we have to audition them, and we also find out what their spiritual life is so that they're not living contradictory to what we're actually presenting as far as our spiritual message. And, it's just one of those scenarios where we set a stage in excellence and maintain it.
Great. And so you've been with the program from the beginning then?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually the founder
You're
of the
ministry. Founder.
Yeah,
okay.
So I originated it, yes.
And how old are you, can I ask?
31 years old.
All right. Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you so much.
I'm looking forward to seeing you perform.
Thank you. God bless you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
On stage now is violinist Aaron Meyer. And let me also remind folks is the folks, I don't want to say that, but you are listening to KBOO Portland, and we are at the 21st anniversary tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, the title being Keep Alive the Dream. We're at the Robert Grady Ford Auditorium at Jefferson High School as we speak. And now, coming up next from the University of Oregon, will be the gospel choir. And I'm still listening to Aaron Meyer, and the music is from what I can is vibrant, and there's a lot of good energy here. What do you make of that, Cherie? And now we're coming up with a guest, and
Lisa Loving, our wonderful PM news director, is walking around backstage. We're backstage here at the auditorium, and she's bringing us wonderful people to talk to. So hi.
Hi.
Here, I've got headphones for you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cherie Blackfeather with KBO Community Radio.
Okay.
Tell me your name.
I'm Leslie Williams.
You talk right into the microphone here.
Leslie Williams.
Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
So how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you.
This is a great day, isn't it?
It's a wonderful day. It's always exciting coming.
So what are you up to today?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I'm with the Highland United Church of Christ Choir that we'll be singing later on in the program. Secondly, I'm connected with a group that's trying to produce an opera. It's a musical, actually, entitled Martin. And the opera is, I can just read to you exactly what we have here. It's an original musical honoring Dr. King in the planning stages. The musical tells the story and the struggle of African Americans to gain freedom and equality. Ken Berry, Charles McGee, Ruby Burns, and myself
Leslie Williams are both working in the project. The musical opens in Dock in Jamestown, Virginia in 1620 when the first slaves were brought to the United States. Then second, there's life on a plantation during the Civil War, which follows the final scene with Dr. King's church in 1968. And all except three of the cast are African Americans. There is ethnic dancing, there is instruments, and there are spirituals are featured in this particular musical. And what the committee is seeking, sponsors or a sponsor or an organization or individuals knowledgeable about producing musicals. If anybody is interested, we would like for us to, I should be contacted. I'm Leslie Williams.
How do they contact you?
Well, you can contact me through Canberry or my phone number is 503-636-4399.
Can you say that one more time?
503-636-4399.
And you are Leslie?
Leslie Williams.
Williams?
Yes.
Okay, that's an exciting project.
Yeah, it is. It's like I say, in the planning stages, so it's like...
Well, it's fun to get in on that level. It's the fun, you know, there's a lot of energy there.
Yeah.
So... when do you hope to launch this project?
We had hoped in 2007 or 2008.
Okay.
We wanted to do sort of a preview maybe in 2007, the statewide program just like today. However, it would be next year.
Right.
During the same time to give a little, you know, maybe do one of the spirituals or do a little skit or something from that musical.
Right.
As part of this celebration.
So today here, have you been able to make some connections with people who might be able to help with this project?
Well, actually, I've been connecting, I've been with the Portland Opera, so I know some people there that I've already contacted. We have the people ready to go. Ruby Burns, who's the African-American dance teacher at Jefferson High School, she's ready to go with dancers, so we just need the sponsors. And we think we even have facilities. We've checked with a couple of places. So we just need some sponsors to get this off the road.
Well, let's say keep KBOO informed. Keep utilizing KBOO, okay, to reach out to the community and you know, let people know what you're needing as this thing progresses.
Thank you.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much for allowing me to share this.
Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Well, we are going to be speaking next with Jefferson Smith from the Bus Project, and he's going to talk about registering voters for the Bus Project. Again, we are KBOO, Portland, Oregon, listener, sponsored radio, community radio, your radio station, which is at, we are at the 21st anniversary tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, live from the Robert Grady Ford Auditorium at Jefferson High School. And once again, I'm Eduardo, and I'm here with Cherie.
Hello. Yeah, and we're here with Jefferson Smith.
Hi there.
How's it going?
You know, it's going really well. I'm happy to be here. I was, until I came to Jefferson today, I was celebrating Martin Luther King Day by looking at advertisements for mattress sales, and it seems to me this is a slightly better way to honor the remembrance of the battle for social justice than by watching daytime television and seeing what discounts I can get, you know, on shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let me backtrack a little bit for folks that might not know. Can you briefly tell people what the Breast Project is?
The Breast Project is, sure. It's a political incubator. It's a voter mobilizer and leadership developer. It drives votes, drives leaders, drives ideas is the pitch that we like to make. But we do a lot of voter registration work, a lot of voter education work, and a lot of training of future political leaders around what we call our six E's: education, economy, environment, equal rights, election reform, and health care with no H. Those are our six E's, sort of, you know, part of the onward sweep to social justice, we hope.
I have a question. What is the Bus Project? How does the Bus Project deal with this massive issue of voter fraud throughout the nation?
It's very funny. If you talk to how we deal with it, well, one is in Oregon, we're fortunate because with our vote-by-mail system, it has a built-in paper trail. Other states don't have that. In fact, one of our former board members is working around the country trying to find other states that will adopt a vote-by-mail system, in part because he thinks it, and there are lots of people who think it increases voter participation, but also because it does have a built-in paper trail. So that'd be the one sort of practical thing. Another frustration that we have on the flip side is how the current administration talks about voter fraud is they're saying there's fraud in voter registration. So they've, in fact, made it harder to register to vote. You have to have an ID, you have to have a Social Security number in order to register to vote. This is something, and this is something that the mainstream media has not covered very much. It's one of the reasons why cable is so important, because it can talk about issues like this. That voter fraud, you know, the big thing is how the votes are counted, and we have to make sure we don't limit people's ability to register.
Let me remind folks that we're going to, we're still at the, this is KBO Portland, Oregon, and we're at Jefferson High School.
Great name for high school, by the way.
Paying tribute and celebrating the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Coming, now we're going to go to, we're going to continue talking to, about the bus project.
I was going to get bumped, but then they didn't bump me. I'm very pleased about that.
Okay, local.
I could talk.
You have more to say?
I actually do. I can share a little bit but I just went out there and communicated with the group that's gathered here. And although I joked about it at the beginning, I actually do think that we need to be doing something to make this. I just saw a poll that said 60% of African Americans do something to remember the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, but only about 23% of Howleys, of, you know, whiteys like me. And it, you know, it seems to me that we've got to be doing something. That this can be a wonderful time, not merely for daytime television and, you know, white sales, which is an ironic thing to have on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, but instead a day that we remember the importance of activism. It's so easy. There was a person who just wrote a book, and I'm forgetting the name of the book, that had a wonderful commentary. And he said, you know, it's very easy for politicians and people who run political organizations to go out there and say, oh, yeah, we're in common cause with Dr. King. We're so happy that he won the battle against social inequity. But if you think about it, what Dr. Mm-hmm. King stood for was much greater than merely the evisceration of narrow Jim Crow laws, but rather an advocacy for broad social justice and equality and peace. And right now, if we're thinking if the dream is realized, if we've reached the promised land, I mean, right now we got 50 million uninsured. You know, we haven't reached the promised land. We've got a disparity between the richest and poorest Americans that grew 71% between 1998 and 2001. We're not yet at the mountaintop. We're in a war overseas over a questionable motive. That, you know, Dr. King came out powerfully in opposition to the Vietnam War. We have not yet realized the dream. So to me, if we can make this day, well, I so appreciate KBOO participating in this event, if we can make some small portion of this day a remembrance of the importance of carrying the torch for the battle for social justice, because it's the kind of thing that doesn't end, and it certainly isn't over now.
You look kind of like a young fella. And
I am a young fella.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how you encountered Dr. King.
That's a great question. The I Have a Dream speech was one of, my dad actually was on the mall at the I Have a Dream speech, and tapes of it and the stories of it, one of the things that really motivated me to get involved in public service. And the idea, in fact, you know, we're the bus project and we get people on the bus. One of the reasons we chose that mantra was because of the story of Rosa Parks. But not only because of the metaphor of the bus, but this is somebody who got on the bus well before she ever got kicked off the bus. And what I mean by this was that the story of Rosa Parks was not merely that she was some person who randomly refused to give up her seat, but in fact that she had joined a movement and she had been trained and she had been put on that bus, and there was a movement ready to react when she refused her seat. And so that before ever, you know, she ever got kicked off the bus, or before she ever asked to move her seat on the bus, she got on the bus. And so that's another reason that we've been really connected. I was really motivated to get involved in politics by the legacy of the social justice movers in the, you know, in the past of the country. And there is nobody that is higher on that list than Dr. King. And having grown up in this area, you know, I went to Grant High School. My name is Jefferson. We're at Jefferson High School. And couldn't get too far away from the social justice battles of 40 years ago.
Well, I want to thank your father for introducing you to Dr. King. I think that's important, and the legacy does live on when we teach our children about that struggle, who these people were, and, you know, and all of the people, like you said, Rosa Parks trained. She took it upon herself to train in to deal with nonviolence, and to struggle nonviolently in collaboration and collectivity with other folks. And that's what we all need to do. And I really feel that, I mean, I'm inspired here today. I'm inspired here today because I feel that collective action. And I think that, one of the things that we talked about earlier was the same thing that you said, is that, you know, it didn't start on a bus.
Right.
It started long before the buzz.
Right.
This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon. Now, coming up next is from the University of Oregon, the University of Oregon Gospel Choir. Now we're going to go to them.
Thanks a lot for having me.
I have personal preference downstairs, and we have two folks who had won, so if you hear your name, please go down and collect your gift. We have Bernula Frazier and a Cedric Berry. Bernula Frazier and Cedric Berry, downstairs in the village area. Our next performers are really one who... Exactly. We have some crowd. Do it again. Woo! Yeah. Raise the roof. That's what I'm talking about. Yes, I want you to be excited. I want you to get involved here. It's an extremely exciting day. But this next guest, we really don't have to even read a bio because they're so renowned across the state and certainly across the country in many respects. This next vocal group and band have sung many special performances around Northwest at many churches and community events. They have performed for the governor and opened for the famed speaker, author, and poet Maya Angelou. Ladies and gentlemen, right here from Eugene, Oregon, we have the University of Oregon Gospel Singers, directed by Mr. Cedric Weary. Please welcome University of Oregon Gospel Choir.
University of Oregon Gospel Singers. Give it up. You've got some good sounds coming out of the Southern Willamette Valley. Once again, I invite people to come down. We're going to be here till 6 o'clock. We're at the Robert Grady Ford Memorial Theater on the campus of Jefferson. And we're located at 5210 North Kirby in Portland. And also you can get us, our simulcast is going over KBOO Radio 90.7. And we're also on the Public Portland Schools Cable Channel 28. Our next guest broke barriers and discrimination for himself and others as he accomplished an illustrious...
We are indeed KBOO, KBOO, Portland, Oregon. We are at the 21st anniversary tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, the theme being Keep Alive the Dream. We're live from the Robert Grady Ford Auditorium at Jefferson High School. I'm Eduardo Dillon de los Tierra.
I'm Sheree Blackfeather.
And I'm Pastor Renee Ward, Associate Producer of the project.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So, tell us more about that.
Well, it's a 21st annual project here. We're celebrating this year, but I've had the pleasure of being affiliated with World Arts Foundation, clear from back in high school, Cleveland High School, when Ken Berry, who's the executive director and the executive producer of this project, along with Michael Chaffee, Bryce invited me to learn about how to do production work and behind the scenes. And through that mentoring, it launched me into my own public relations project and media relations. And each year I come back, especially when I live in town, come back and help put this together. So this year I'm one of the producers on the project, did with publicity and fundraising and things like that. But today I'm the coordinator of the Vendors Village, and we're having a wonderful time downstairs. We have American Red Cross, who is, of course, doing the blood drive, our annual Martin Luther King blood drive, and also a number of representatives from the community that are down there. Everything from Eats, if you want to come and you say, well, I got to go get something to eat first, come on down here and eat.
What's down there to eat?
Well, we have a new business, and that's what I like. I was driving along in North Northeast Portland and saw a wonderful kiosk called Sisters Barbecue. A lovely couple that are the proprietors. And I stopped by and I said, would you like to be a part of this community? And as a startup business, it was the perfect thing. And then they said, they went one further and they let me taste their food. I said, oh, you got to be at this event. And it's wonderful. We have Jefferson High School's Parent Teacher Student Association. They're also one of our concessionaires. And then we have information table. We also have Portland Center Stage down there on a production that I'm getting ready to do for breast cancer awareness next month called Crowns, which is a gospel play. We also have the 9/11 emergency preparedness table, and as well as the Water Bureau, who has a wonderful video presentation that hasn't even been previewed in the area where they went down to Hurricane Katrina and helped, of course, with that bad situation with all the water and how they assisted in that. It's a phenomenal little video that they're showing. And along with that, if you need a little TLC, we have a young lady by the name of Jackie Gaffney, who is happens to be my personal LMT and a health consultant, and she's down there sort of taking away the stress for folks. And some wonderful artisans, too. We have MLB Art, as well as Personal Preference, that comes back every year. And if you are a aficionado of vintage African-American vintage subject matters, Midnight Rambo videos with Thoris Benton. So it's a variety. But I encourage also with the American Red Cross. I mean, that is very, very important with our blood donor drive. And we want you to come out. And the food drive.
Yeah. Let's tell people out there about the food drive and the blood drive.
Yes. Each year we partner with one of our community partners, which is New Hope Missionary Baptist Church, where Pastor Joyner is the pastor. And each year they are so diligent and consistent in collecting the food and or donations of $3 in at the time they enter. This food, of course, is in partnership with supporting the local, like their own particular emergency food assistance program, as well as the Oregon Food Bank. Then we also have, of course, because of the always challenge to, I believe, getting persons of color to contribute to the African community, to be accessible, what a wonderful opportunity to be convening in one place. We can get a large number of folks coming through to provide blood donations. We have a student that was identified through Jefferson High School that is in need of a transplant, a bone marrow transplant. So it's a little more than just the blood drive itself. It's to identify folks. And I've had the pleasure when I lived in the Bay Area, it was my first time getting on a donor list. And because of the uniqueness of my blood type, I was able to be matched with someone. And it might not be immediate that that happens when you are registered, but it's so nice to get that letter and say, we have someone that you can help.
and that you would you please provide audition, make yourself available. And it's been very helpful. So I've really encouraged that. And even not just on today, we want to encourage you to continue to do this. We are coming out. We've been blessed with a lot of rain. We don't have a flood, but anything's possible. Accidents happen every day. That's why they call them accidents. You don't expect them. But when those tragic times come or those challenges, we want to be able to have enough resources, and in this case, blood donation, and to be able to support and within the bone marrow transplant program.
I think that's wonderful that that's a part of what's going on here today. There's a lot going on here today.
It is, and I appreciate KBOO. You guys have always been so committed to this. As long as I can remember, you've been in partnership with us, and I really appreciate being that outreach to the voice to our community.
And for people who are listening to us, there's still plenty of time to come in, to come down here, isn't there?
Oh, most definitely. This is our peak time. We've got the, I don't want to say the best is yet to come. We still, and I have the pleasure of introducing Eddie Faye Gates, who is our keynote speaker who will be presenting. She is the founder of the Tulsa, Oklahoma curator for the Black Wall Street, that's right, Black Wall Street Museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And she has was recently recognized in the Essence magazine and Jet magazines, as well as other publications, for her leadership around reparations for the Tulsa race riots of 1921 and her research to bring about reparations for the survivors and the descendants of those folks who were massacred during that overtake. And she has her books here. She's doing a book signing currently if you want to get ahead of the game. She is right now in the foyer area receiving folks and giving information. She's an oral historian. She has been in partnership with what they call the Dream Team on this project, with unfortunately the demise of Johnny Cochran last year, who along with Charles Ogletree and 17 other leading attorneys who donate their time and continue to do so in hopes of bringing about reparations for these victims of this terrible incident. It is been covered up, but with the help of Sister Gates over the years has brought it to light, and that's what's so important. A lot of folks think that it is true that the Jewish Holocaust, but we have a couple domestic Holocausts here in the United States, and one of them was the Tulsa race riots.
Can you give your contact information?
Personally, for me, I work as a public relations person, Niche PR, and you can also hear me on the counterpart, KKSL, 12:09 a.m. I'm on Monday through Friday evenings. But what we do, you can contact me personally at 503-920-0108. You will receive a voice note. If you'd like more information on how to support our efforts for next year, want to volunteer, we start, as soon as this is over, we start
yeah.
again. And also, you can contact me through my mailing address, which is P.O. Box 12252, Portland, Oregon, 97212. If you'd like to contact the executive director himself, Kenneth Berry, phone number is 503-816-9001.
And I know when I'm listening to that, you know, on the air, and I hear phone numbers and information given, and I usually don't have a pencil right in my hand,
right.
So let's do it one more time. Get your pencil.
Yes, what I need to encourage you to do is, again, 503-816-9001, and that's, of course, to contact Mr. Ken Berry. If he's not available, give me a call, and I'll get back to you on my voicemail, 503-920-0108. Better yet, come on down. We're going to be here till 6 o'clock, and it's really important. We've got the best. We've got the Highland Choir is coming up under the direction of Danielle Damon, the Royal Priesthood, a number. We still have the Lifetime Achievement Awards, which we all always honor folks who have done some outstanding things that we don't hear about, our everyday heroes and sheroes, and we want to be able to acknowledge them. And we earlier commemorated all those who have passed on, like Mercedes Diaz and others who have supported this program, so Bill Jones and her family members are here supporting. So, again, the legacy goes on, and that's what the concept is on this dream project.
Right.
Thank you so much. Okay, we're at the 21st anniversary tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon. Now on stage is the Highland United Church of Christ Choir.
Oh, God!
And that was, on stage was the Highland United Church of Christ Choir, directed by Danielle Damon. And
That was very, that was a beautiful, here they are, very energetic and beautiful to watch. We're coming up next is the keynote speaker. Chris? You know, it's interesting here today because we have a schedule in front of us, but actually, you know, this is live and things are happening as they're happening, so.
Pay us a visit and bring us a little something. It's called history. And this is a lady. How many of you heard of Rosa Parks? Yes. Well, we've got someone, you know, after Rosa went on to her reward, we have someone under the auspices that you may not know about. How many of you ever heard of Essence Magazine? You heard of Jet Magazine? All right, well, this is a lady that was just featured. How many of you saw that cover where Beyonce was on the cover? Okay, well, you know, I think this lady should have been on the cover. She's our heroine, my matron of motivation. Her name is called Miss Etta Fay Gates. She is the founder, amen somebody, Etta Fay Gates. You better get to know her. She is the founder and current curator of the Black Wall Street of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And she's going to come break you off a little something on the history of one of the most, I would say, most terrible Holocaust, one of the most terrible massacres that ever occurred right here in our United States, none other than the Greenwood Riots of 1921. Will you please welcome Etta Fay Gates?
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. I'm having a wonderful time in Portland. After I go over to Washington, I can say I have visited all 48 of the contiguous states in the United States. So I'm having a good time here. It seems to be my luck to follow people like at a book signing, I once followed Patti LaBelle. The woman did everything but dance on the ceiling. But I held my own. People loved what I had to say because I speak with a passion. So I'm going to speak tonight. And last night at the church that I attended, there was a beautiful program. And once again, I followed a dynamic speaker. But I did what I had to do. I shared my information, too. So this is a wonderful program. I've enjoyed everything I've heard so far. I'm going to try to keep this short and tight, which is hard for a teacher. I've been actually teaching and a writer. I've been teaching and writing since I was 5 years old in Preston, Oklahoma. Knew then I was going to be a teacher and a writer. I'm going to share with you some information from about Martin Luther King, Jr., one of my heroes. And I'm not just saying this out of lip service. One of the speakers last night mentioned that Martin Luther King was his hero. In fact, he mentioned 8 of his favorite sayings. Well, I start my book, my autobiography, my first book, which is outside. And if I don't cover as much as you'd like to hear, I will be outside selling books. Come to my table. I have documents, even a copy of the riot lawsuit. And I will share with you until they shut the place down. And here's what I say at the preface of my book, my autobiography, Miss Lucy's Cookies, and other links in my Black family support system. The outstanding spiritual leaders who have given me inspiration, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., minister and Nobel Prize-winning civil rights activist, and Mary Baker Eddy, the founder and discoverer of Christian Science. And Dr. Martin Luther King said these words that a person read last night. He mentioned 8 of Dr. King's favorite statements, and he mentioned this last one, and that's in my book. Dr. King said that everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul-generated love. And so with a heart full of grace and soul-generated love, I wrote this book. I love the man. I'm not just playing lip service to him. I love the man. He came to Tulsa, and I have pictures of him in Tulsa and what he did when he came to Tulsa. I did not get to participate in that because at that time I was a military dependent wife and my late husband was stationed in London, England. So I missed all of the civil rights movement. But I got a chance to relive what I always wanted to do, and that's a passion for helping the underdog, the poor, the disenfranchised. And I got that chance through the Oklahoma Commission to Study the Tulsa Race Riot of 1921. Now, for my little short talk, I'm going to try to keep to my schedule. I have just listed some things about Martin Luther King. Good news, bad news. And the good news is things like Martin Luther King Jr. Days like this. This is one of the best I've ever seen, and I've seen them from coast to coast. Black History Month. The bad news, I wish we didn't have to have Martin Luther King Jr. Days and Black History Month. I wish we celebrated every single day with justice for all. Other good news, since 1963 we have made many gains. I give credit to that, many gains, political, economic, social. For instance, we have high-ranking minorities in high-ranking positions. People like Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Clarence Thomas. The bad news that would disappoint Martin Luther King Jr. is that there's too much division, too much talk, too little real action that benefits all of our people. Another thing he would be disappointed in is that we have not faced world issues. That's why I wrote my other two books, to try to set the record straight. Why are there pockets of poverty? Why are there people who do not have equal rights today? What was the role of colonialism in this? The world does not want to face that. And so Martin Luther King would be disappointed in that. That's bad news. Some nations are facing it. In fact, I think he'd be surprised that South Africa has gone so far in reconciliation. I think he would be disappointed that we've gone so little in Oklahoma and in other places dealing with reparations for racial riots. I think he would be disappointed with the corporate greed scandals and the focus on individuals and residual racism that exists today. I think he would be disappointed. I think he would, some of the things about Martin Luther King that I love about the man was, first of all, his deep spirituality, his love for the Creator, his love for all mankind, his respect for family, neighbors, teachers, parents, elders, siblings, extended family, the downtrodden working class, his classmates, just everyone. I love that about the man. I think he would like what this Oklahoma Commission to Study the Tulsa Race Riot did. And I won't have time to go into detail, but meet me out at the desk. I have a copy of the official document of the commission, which we completed after 4 years of research, 1997 through 2001. That document, of the 50 states, well, the 48 contiguous states, of the 50 states, all have to submit a state-written document for an award, a library award. 2001, we won that award for that commission report. The documentation is there. We told about that riot. It had been covered up for 75 years. Now it's the most known event probably in history. We've had reporters, print and media, major reporters, Emmy Award producers, 60 Minutes 2, Dateline, Nightline, History Channel, you name it, they've been. Nancy Dore, one of your own Portland documentary producers, came to Tulsa and interviewed these riot victims and did a beautiful documentary film, which has not been released yet, but Nancy was in the audience. She had to work tonight. She may be gone, but do keep in touch with her about that article, about that documentary. So I think he would be pleased with what we try to do by pointing out the things that need to be done. I mentioned before the Riot Commission. There were 11 of us on that commission. We worked from 1997 through 2001. There wouldn't have been that report if it hadn't been for Representative Don Ross, one of our black representatives who I think has been to Portland before, and Senator Maxine Horner, a black senator who co-authored the bill that created the commission. There were only 5 black legislators in that Oklahoma legislature. I am grateful to say they did support this. We couldn't have done it without the state of Oklahoma supporting this. Those 5 couldn't have done it alone. So we did address the issue. We did our findings. I think Martin Luther King would be proud of what we did. He would be disappointed that they have not dealt with this reparations issue. I'm the one that was made chair of the Survivors Committee. I interviewed 200 known living black survivors of that riot, the worst in the history of this nation, probably in the world. Among them was one dear man from Portland, Oregon that I met, William Harold Woods. His nephew, Ken Berry, is responsible for much of the events, many of the events that are happening today. Ken, thank you. The Berry family, the Bowles family. I have become like family to them because of that interview. I took those survivors into my heart, and they call me family. I even call William Harold Woods Uncle Hal, just like they do. And I feel that way, and he feels that way about me. I think Martin Luther King would love that we're working to right something that happened that was so wrong. And I'm not condemning Tulsa. I love Tulsa. I live there. I've lived there 38 years since my husband left the military. Before that, we lived all over the United States. Lived 6.5 years in England. We chose Tulsa. There are many good people. In my book, Ride on Greenwood, I have a whole chapter, Good White Samaritans, who risked their lives to go in and help black people get out. I have a chapter about the good, bad, and the ugly. Some of the best in mankind happened there, some of the worst, some of the ugliest. And what I want Tulsa to do is recognize and pay reparations to these survivors. We did our research. We know who they are. And here's the evidence that would definitely disappoint Martin Luther King most of all. We have been turned down everywhere we went to present this information. The Tulsa judge, federal judge James Ellison, did not deny the report, agreed with everything we found, but said we should have filed within a narrower 2-year limit. Threw it out. We went to 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver. 9 judges, 5 upheld Judge Ellison's ruling. One of the 4 dissenters was so distraught he wrote his own version as if he were one of the survivors. And it was so beautifully done, so researched, that became part of the evidence that the lawyers for the riot victims used to write their Supreme Court appeal. Well, guess what? We went to the Supreme Court. I went with the survivors, some of the survivors. We met on the steps of the famous U.S. Supreme Court and presented that appeal, asking the court to overturn what we thought and what 4 justices thought were unfair decisions. Guess what? They refused to hear the case, did not deny the evidence, but said we should have met that 2-year limit. I think that would disappoint Martin Luther King tremendously, that we use technicalities like that to deny these 200 dear, sweet little people, no longer 200, we're down to 97. The rest have died without ever having justice. I don't think Martin would like that very much. I think what I want to close with, my conclusion, is how we can be more like Martin Luther King. We can stop being hypocrites. We can stop talking about us versus them. We can stop talking about tax breaks for the corporate wealthy and concentrate on the poor and the marginal. That is so desperately needed. And I think God, I do believe there is a creator. You may call him God as I do. You may call him some other name. But some spiritual being created us all. And all religions have something in common, and that is love for your neighbor. As I heard all day yesterday at the Martin Luther King event, love your neighbor as yourself. We haven't been doing that. Martin would be disappointed. For instance, the Katrina incident. But also, my grandmother always told me, God works in mysterious ways. God don't love ugly. God is going to make things right. And I think two things Martin would think are really helping us to point that out. And one is the Katrina incident. That was a terrible thing to humankind. But it may wake us up to see what happens when you marginalize people. And when you use funds that could have been used to save the lives of people in those areas, and especially when you use it on something like a peanut festival, I've just been in just anger since I heard that. And when you use it on something frivolous and leave making the levees safe, I don't think Martin would like that. I'm going to close by telling you what I think Martin would like for you to do. I think he would like for us to do more for our youth, and I love what you do in Portland. You seem very dedicated on working with your youth. He would want us to get these children turned off gangs, turned on peaceful events, work on your schools. He would love us to work on health issues. It's a shame when we have elderly people who eat dog food, who do not have proper medication. That should not happen in a nation as wealthy as this United States. And back to youth. Bill Cosby created quite a controversy when he blamed parents and rap music for all our troubles. That I agree that both of those do need some changes, but you also have to, Bill didn't tell the whole story. He didn't plug in the failure of society and its what its role is in the education of children. When you have underfunding, when you have grants going for frivolous things rather than education, the nation, the government is at fault, and we need to hold them more accountable. Finally, I would like to conclude with what I think Martin Luther King would want us to do. He would want us to work with these young people, get them out of the gangs. He would want us to work with elderly. He would want us to keep the ball rolling. He would want us not to give up hope. Look for faith. The man had faith. The man lived in Alabama where they were lynching and carrying on. And yet he talked about this day of freedom. We need to get that back. We need to have faith. And we will find it in places we're not even looking. For instance, CNN TV, C-SPAN, had a wonderful program recently about Justice Hugo Black and how the man revolutionized the South. We thought he'd be a terrible judge. He was a former Klan member. The man turned out to be one of the best friends minority miners had ever had. He changed the thinking of the nation at that time and brought about many civil rights gains. Martin would want us to do that. Look for the good. Take advantage. Don't give up. Keep fighting for all mankind.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome executive producer for Keep Alive the Dream, Ken Berry, Michael Grice, president of World Arts, and welcome back Reverend Renee Ward for a special presentation.
And that was, we were listening to Eddie Jean Gates talking about the Tulsa race riots and accountability. This is KBOO Portland, Oregon. We're at the 21st anniversary tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. We're broadcasting live from the Robert Grady Ford Auditorium at Jefferson High School. And coming up next is the Royal Priesthood Choir of Seattle. And again, Danielle Damon is the director.
And we spoke with him earlier. Right now, I think Ken Berry is on the stage. Hello.
And now let's...
Ride on Greenwood. And it gives me great pleasure that you have enriched our program this year in our 21st celebration here at Jefferson High School in Portland, Oregon, all the way from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Won't you put your hands together and thank Eddie Faye Gates. There's a part two of this award, and a lot of times we hear the term unsung heroes, and many of the men that are in the background of Portland's history who came here and worked on the railroad, men who built families and bought homes and put their kids through school and just have been anchors in our community, sometimes go unrecognized, but we wanted to take this opportunity, since this is a family member of Eddie Faye Gates, who came here 2 weeks before the great Tulsa riot and was spared that trauma and has built a life and a family and been a mentor for many of us young men, particularly those who worked in and around the railroad environment down at the Union Station. Mr. Harold Woods, would you please accept this award, Lifetime Achievement Award for Special Service? William Harold Woods. Woods, congratulations and thank you very much. Thank you very much. Congratulations. As we look back at the 21 years of celebration, we note that we have had a number of outstanding musicians and vocalists come to us from the city of Seattle, Washington, and bless our stage. We feel the anticipation that you do, and like those groups from up north, we know that there's a long passageway, a deep route that runs between Portland and Seattle. This group I'm about to introduce has been together for only 3 years, has garnered national acclaim, a number of awards, has toured with the likes of Fred Hammond, has graced gospel stages and venues across the nation, and particularly in the Pacific Northwest. Won't you put your hands together and give a very warm Portland greeting to the Royal Priesthood.
of music that used to happen when there was no organ, there was no drums. All you had was a wooden floor, your hands, and your foot. That's called sanctified church. Can y'all have some sanctified church with me for a minute? Y'all ain't ready to be cute, are you? Are y'all ready to be cute, or y'all gonna lift them up? Clap your hands and... Now we're gonna turn it up a notch. I want y'all to get grimy. I want y'all to put y'all foot through the floor. Ready? Listen. 1, 2, 3, go! Energy to do that, but you know what? If you have words that you can speak, I want you to lift them with your mouth right now. Go ahead. Getting on their nerves, something that's bothering them, and you just wanted to go away. You know what? Walter Hawkins wrote a song a long time ago and said, "Don't wait till the battle's over. What can you do?" I'm gonna tell you, if you shout, you can raise your mouth, you can raise your hands, you can raise your legs, but as long as you attach faith to that situation, that problem will be over. So can we just take a split second and not think about what we're going through, but not wait till the battle's over, but shout right now? Can we shout right now? Let's not talk about it. Let's be about it. Let's not talk about it. Let's see about it. Is that okay? 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. celebrating this year. Can you guys consider yourself blessed? Anybody feel blessed?
Yeah.
Don't you understand that what God's doing that gave you the blessings that you have right now? How many of you all feel blessed? How many of you all feel blessed? Look at the person next to you and say, neighbors, you know what? I don't know what you're going through, but you are a blessed child. You are a king's kid. And you know what? If you're going through something right now, I'm going to help you praise him.
00 Portland, Oregon. And of course, we are live from the 21st anniversary tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And the theme being Keep Alive the Dream. We're live from the Robert Grady Ford Auditorium. I have here with me Eddie Faye Gates. And she was one of the speakers. She was the speaker on the Tulsa, Oklahoma Tulsa race riots. I'm glad you're here, Jane.
Thank you.
And I also have with me William Harold Woods, and he is one of the Tulsa race riots survivors. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. Gene, let's talk for the benefit of the people who are listening and who don't quite know what the Tulsa race riots were. Can you briefly tell people what that was?
Actually, it was not a riot, but because the law called it that in the House Bill 1035, we referred to it, those of us who were on the commission, as the riot because that's what the law called. It was really a massacre. A riot, you know, has to be planned and both equally at fault. This was not. The black community was attacked. There was some warning. In fact, my ancestors got out about 3 weeks before. The motive was jealousy and greed and envy. The first settlers in Oklahoma were African settlers who had come across the Atlantic, settled in Central America, moved on over to Louisiana Purchase Territory, which was called Oklahoma at that time. So before any colonists set foot, any of the European colonials set foot in America in the 15th century, there were Africans already there. They were the nearest, right across the water. They came in three waves. Some were involuntary. If you were out there and the waves and storms came up, you were coming to America whether you meant to or not. Others got there accidentally, and when they got back, they told what, you know, was a good place to be. Let's go there and settle. So some voluntarily settled. Before any of the colonists were there, Africans were there. And this has been very hard to document, but I did the research. Many of us have done the research. And my three books, I talk about this. The best place to research colonialism is Liverpool, England.
exhibit proof of the first stop out of Africa, where most of the slaves were captured for the European, early European slave trade and the American slave trade out of Africa. We know two places where they came from, Elmina Castle and Senegal. Alex Haley's people came from Senegal. And because he knew a few words that his grandfather said, he could trace himself back. I can't do that. My folks were captured, I don't know where. They were not allowed to bring anything, probably on the way to the market, had no suitcase. That's how the African-American experience differs from the European. I sympathize with the immigrants who suffered and stayed on the ocean 6 weeks and months at a time. But they had something that my African ancestors didn't have. They had their suitcases filled with their treasures. They had their books. They had their. They were able to keep their language, and the Africans were not able to do that. So our experience is totally different. That's why I wrote my three books, to let you know how this differed from other people. Saying, well, you just want special treatment. No, we don't. We just want recognition of what you did, and it was wrong. And it helps to, that's why we're fighting this reparation. That's why Oklahoma's filed the lawsuit. Well, the root problem was there was no respect for people of African descent at that time. When the Europeans did come to the Americas and visited the Louisiana Purchase territory, what was then Oklahoma, they found black people already there. I know this. I've researched. I'm a researcher. I get my facts. And the best place to get those facts, Liverpool, England. That was the first stop when the captured people were captured at either Elmina Castle or Senegal. And they were put on those ships, and the first stop was Liverpool. They dropped them off to do the slave work in England before it banded in the early 1800s. And then it went on. And so my late husband was a military man. We lived in England 6.5 years. 4 of our 5 kids were born there. It was a haven for a history major like me. I did some of my best research. I have seen those documents. I have seen what Columbus said when he landed in America. He called the people Indians, and oh, what a disservice that did for our history, because they were nothing connected to India. He called them Indians, and the word stuck, and it just warped our history. Those people, but they said, he described them. And Washington Irving and others who visited in the early era described who they saw, and they were shocked. They said, well, Columbus said it. I've seen the documents at Liverpool. He said, either I have sailed the wrong way, and I'm in West Africa, or I have sailed the right way, and the Africans have beat me to the Americans. Well, that was the truth. But it has taken all these years to get you to acknowledge that. All three of my books start with a chapter with what the research shows. These black people were already there. They were not Indians. They were Africans. Some came in voluntarily. The ships of hurricanes and things, if you're out on that water fishing, which Africans did, and the storms came up, you were coming to America whether you meant to or not. Some came that way, and then when the currents changed, they went back home and told, hey, that's a pretty good-looking place. Let's go over and settle. So voluntary migrations. And then you had voluntary migrations there. You had the involuntary ones. Then you had massive ones later on after the colonials, the colonization, and people trying to flee the European colonists. So that's who was there. And if only we hadn't used that word, Indian. And of course, we get criticized as modern historians, revision. And that's what historians do. You're always revising. You're looking for new information. You're plugging in the old information. You're getting new. And you're constantly revising history. That's what historians do. But we get criticized when we upset the view. And it was a view that the colonists created to justify what they were doing, because they claimed to be great spiritually minded nations, great democratic nations. And what they were doing was anything but. And so they created this myth of the inferior African and denied them the right to keep any of their heritage. I don't know where my ancestors came from. I do know on my father's side, my maiden name is Petit. We call it Petit. It would be petite, which means small or little in French. The French ancestor and the black cook from Africa. On my mother's side, a German slave master named Mentor and the black cook from Africa. And many of us are this way. You can see that in my heritage. I have, my father had green eyes. He took after the Frenchman. I take both, the shape of the nose, the shape of the lips, African, the hair length, European, but it's kinky, it's the perm on here. So we're just mixed up, and people didn't know what to call us. So they called us mulattoes. That's what my dad is listed on his birth certificate, mulatto. Still, he had that African blood in it, and that kept him from equal justice in the nation. So the riot was caused by greed. People were jealous that these black people who had been there all this time owned this rich land where oil had been discovered. Whites had run out of... Tulsa just became a haven for everybody. Bankers, lawyers, doctors, ministers who came to save the wild and woolly heathens. And they needed a place to expand. They ran out of space. The only place they couldn't go further west, that was the Arkansas River. They couldn't go east of farms and people already there. So they looked at Greenwood. So these are only black people, you know. Let's buy it. They thought they were being real neat to say, we'll buy it. Put little signs on, sell it, buy in real estate. They wanted to build a railroad station.
Well,
the black people wouldn't do it. And so they put notes on the doors, get out by June 1st or else. They didn't do it. They got burned down. So it was greed. Oh, they had to have a reason, though, so that they wouldn't look bad. So an elevator incident was cooked up about a black man assaulting a white woman in an elevator. They were lovers. I did the research. They went lived together in Kansas City, Missouri. The man came died in a lumber accident in Portland, Oregon. So you got a connection.
I also have with at the table here William Harold Woods. He